The views, opinions, and content of the show hosts and their guests appearing on America's Web Radio are their own and do not necessarily reflect those of the station.
You're listening to America's Web Radio on the AmericasBroadcastNetwork.com. Thank you for listening.
You're listening to America's Web Radio. It's time now for the Doctor's Lounge Show with Dr. Hal Schurz.
Welcome back into the Doctor's Lounge. I'm your host, Dr. Hal Schurz, and every week I or my co-host, Dr. Scott, bring you the information in healthcare that doctors are talking about in doctors' lounges all over the country. The show is intended to arm you with the information that you need so that you can advocate for the healthcare of yourself and for your family and to make the decisions that are best for you. The show is brought to you by the Docs for Patient Care Foundation, which is the only physician-led healthcare think tank in the country. The Docs for Patient Care Foundation stands for the principles of the doctor-patient relationship and for healthcare freedom for all Americans. So your support is crucial to allow us to do the work that we do and to give you the information that you need on this show every week. So we need your support and appreciate anything that you can do to help us. It's your contributions are tax deductible and they are critical, vital to allow us to continue to do our jobs. So go to our website at DocsForPatientCare.org, DocsForPatientCareFoundation.org. That's D for PC Foundation.org. I did not say triple W today because it was brought to my attention by one of my regular listeners, Dr. Phil Weiss, is a shout out that triple W is so 1990s and you don't need to do that. So it's D for PC Foundation.org. So please go ahead and contribute as little as you feel you can or as much as you're willing to give. Do it on a regular basis, on a recurring basis, so that you don't have to think about it anymore. So today I want to cover one major subject, and then if we have time, I'm going to start a topic that I've talked about before. The first topic I'd like to talk about is anti-Semitism, which has crept into healthcare. And then, given the time, if if time allows, I'd like to touch on big hospitals overseeing the demise of private practice in the United States. So before I start off on either of those topics, I want to share a story with you. And everybody today is now talking about being woke or wokeism. I have friends who are left who hate that term, which unfortunately for them arose with the left. But wokeism is an extension of the term political correctness. Political correctness became a popular expression that has made its way into our lexicon, into our vocabulary over the past 3 to 4 decades. But its origin, interestingly, goes back much further. And I'm going to share with you this story. The origin of political correctness can actually be found in the Harry Truman Library and Museum in Independence, Missouri. It can be found in an exchange of telegrams between President Harry Truman and General Douglas MacArthur on the day before the actual signing of the Japanese surrender for World War II. So the first telegram was one that General MacArthur composed to the president on September 1st, 1945, that read, quote, "Tomorrow we meet with those yellow-bellied bastards and sign the surrender documents. Any last-minute instructions?" The President Truman replied, quote, "Congratulations on a job well done, but you must tone down your obvious dislike of the Japanese when discussing the terms of surrender with the press, because some of your remarks are fundamentally not politically correct." Well, the general then replied, "Wilco, sir, but both Chester," that's Chester Nimitz, the admiral in charge of the U.S. Navy fleet, "Chester and I are somewhat confused. Exactly what does the term politically correct mean?" And President Truman replied, "Political correctness is a doctrine recently fostered by a delusional, illogical minority and promoted by a sick mainstream media which holds forth the proposition that it is entirely possible to pick up a piece of shit by the clean end," end quote. That is the best definition of political correctness. And it rings true even today, so much more so today. A delusional, illogical minority that promotes a sick doctrine that is expounded on by a sick mainstream media. That's the definition of wokeism and being woke and politically correct, the antithesis of normal. So the antithesis of normal brings me to what we are witnessing in this country since October 7th in Israel, which is the attempt to take down the United States from within by terrorists who are capitalizing on the ignorance of our young people who have been brainwashed and indoctrinated by a sick, perverted college faculty in every university practically in this country. The ongoing saga of the demonization of Israel and Zionists and Jews and the promotion of Palestinians and Hamas is very disturbing to me personally, and it should be to every single American who believes in the ideals of this country. This attempt has made the victimizers the victims, and the victims the victimizers. And this poisonous rhetoric has not surprisingly made its way into healthcare. We've seen it on college campuses all across the country. It has been promoted by individuals who very often are outside agitators, but who have a population of useful idiots who've been told that there is a good side and a bad side to this fight, and it's the Israelis who are the bad ones. They're the ones who are committing genocide and all kinds of nonsense against Israelis and the Jewish people. This poisonous rhetoric that has made its way into healthcare now is not surprising. Let me share with you a blog that was written recently by a Jewish medical student who has elected anonymity rather than facing retribution from school officials and fellow students, which was sure to come had this student identified himself or his school. The blog is entitled, "I Would Never Let These Doctors Treat My Relatives." In this blog, this student wrote, and I'm going to paraphrase for the student, 10 days after the October 7th massacre, numerous student organizations within my medical school co-authored a message in response to the Israel-Hamas war. There was no mention of Hamas, hostages, or the massacre. These future physicians sought to deny Jewish and Israeli pain. They did not want to humanize Jews. One student confidently claimed 2 million Palestinians were about to be exterminated. This went unchallenged by administration, and they felt it would be best to remain silent. This was a signal to the mob that they can go much further. Online student forums quickly devolved, where students rationalized terrorism. One person claimed that the hostages were not the main character in the story. Another stated that Israel weaponized the rape of Israeli women by Hamas to justify Palestinian suffering, and another student denied that the rapes even occurred. Students denied the fact that Hamas uses hospitals as terror bases, despite overwhelming evidence to show that they did. A non-Jewish student lectured a Jewish student on the definition of anti-Semitism, stating that consensus Jewish ideology is morally corrupt. On International Holocaust Remembrance Day, a student compared the situation in Gaza to Nazi Germany. The less vocal students simply used symbols like Palestinian flag emoji on their emails to show their solidarity. Some students even protested in front of our hospital with a banner praising the October 7th massacre. This student wrote that these people will be your physicians. Think about that. These people will be your physicians. If these students were saying these things about Jews in front of hundreds of other students on medical school mediated forums, what were they saying on social media or in private group chats? There was so much hatred, and this was just the tip of the iceberg. Soon afterward, over 30% of the College of Medicine student body signed another letter to the administration. 30%. Again, no mention of hostages, Hamas, or October 7th. They were just concerned about Palestinian deaths reported by Hamas. Jewish pain is invisible to these people. He goes on to write, "Our curriculum teaches that implicit bias, such as that toward black patients by white doctors, has historically led to the harm of these patients. Explicit physician bias toward an Israeli or a Jewish patient could be far more dangerous. What if that explicit bias moves to hate, which is what we are seeing right now? This is likely just as the dialogue has moved from the people who stated that they are against the policies of Israel and the Israeli government to what we now see, which is that Zionists and Israelis and Jews are inherently evil. These are the doctors of tomorrow that are saying these things. Can these people even deliver patient-centered care if they are intellectually unequipped to see humanity in Israelis or in Zionists or in Jews? If they can't see evidence like Hamas rape of women, how can they be capable of practicing evidence-based medicine? How can Jews safely and reliably seek care from physicians who feel and think this way? This student went on to write, "I would never let my family near my medical school or my medical school's hospital." At a time where microaggressions are punished at medical schools, such as misgendering a person, macroaggression against Jews are tolerated. Anti-Semitism is pervasive in medical schools for three reasons. Number one, Jewish students are afraid to speak out for fear of retribution. Number two, anti-Zionist Jews are heavily overrepresented among younger academics, and they distort the consensus that actually exists. Only about 10% of American Jews are anti-Zionist, and that number comes from extrapolation from BDS polls, BDS meaning boycott, divest, and sanction, which is the effort to isolate Israel and not allow their products to be sold in the world market, not use them, not buy them, boycott any investments in Israel that we're seeing these students on college campuses demanding of their hospital endowment funds. So about 10% of American Jews are anti-Zionist, but much higher in medical schools. This is important. Tolerance of Jews in medical schools is conditional on them being anti-Zionist. And so these Jews become the dominant voice, the voice that these are the useful idiots that these agitators are trying to promote. Non-Jewish students tokenize this overrepresented, politically convenient perspective to deflect accusations of anti-Semitism on their part, thus engaging in what we know in science to be sampling bias, which is a concept that every single medical student is taught in how to read and review and analyze medical literature. We look at medical literature with a jaded eye, looking for flaws in what we are reading. And one of the flaws is sampling bias, if it's not a representative sample. And this is what we're seeing now with the small minority of anti-Zionist Jews who are being elevated and promoted to represent even Jews are against what's happening in Israel. As a comparison, 20% of black Americans are conservative, but this perspective would never be presented or tolerated as representing the views of the black community writ large. The third reason for anti-Semitism in medical schools is that administrations cannot be relied on to act altruistically or fairly. The administrations calculate that the cost of upsetting the hostile mob is far greater than the cost of leaving Jewish students and patients vulnerable. This is the area where pushback can make a difference, and I'm going to get to that in a few minutes. But the irony here, the utter sheer irony, is the ignorance of these medical students when it comes to Israel and Israeli doctors and the healthcare system there. What is a little known fact is that Jewish doctors in Israel take care of tens of thousands of Muslim patients annually who come to Israel from Jordan, from Lebanon, from Syria, from Gaza, from the West Bank, to get state-of-the-art healthcare in the Israeli healthcare system, which is excellent and up to par with U.S. standards for healthcare. But these Muslims have to do this in secrecy. They have to secretly come across their borders, because if the political class in their respective countries learned that they were receiving care in Israel, there would be harsh retribution against them and their family. This is the reality of what is happening in Israel. They are not persecuting Arabs, Muslims, Palestinians. They are not committing a genocide. There's no apartheid. These are all terms that the radical left loves to use to demonize Israel and now Jews. So anti-Zionism is no question, is unquestionably anti-Semitism. And it is not up to these medical students, these people whose brains have been perverted, to tell a Jewish student what they believe anti-Semitism is. That is absurd. You know what is ironic is that when Trump was accused of defending the white nationalists who were marching in Charlottesville, Virginia, saying Jews will not replace us, Trump was accused of supporting them, being anti-Semitic, because he had said that there were good people on both sides of this debate between white people and white nationalists and the black community that was protesting in the wake of the George Floyd epidemic. But you've got President Biden, who is presiding over chaos on dozens, if not hundreds, of college campuses across the country, and not saying a word of support. And his lack of support for the Jewish community, for Israel, for Zionists, is no different than the accusations that were falsely made against President Trump, claiming that he supported an anti-Jewish rant, an anti-Jewish mob. And it is far more dangerous what we are seeing right now with the silence of Joe Biden and his administration, because this is something that is not going to go away unless strong steps are taken. And I never thought that I would see this in the United States. I never believed that this could happen. And it's not happening because of white nationalists. It's happening because of pro-Hamas, pro-terrorist, pro-Palestinian individuals that are being, first of all, that have been allowed to come to this country by visas in healthcare, in academic institutions to allow them to become educated and then to become instructors or professors and pass along this poisonous ideology to young, impressionable minds that believe what they hear over and over again without a dissenting view or an opposing view. These individuals in colleges, unfortunately, so many of them, it's a lost generation. It's like what's happened in the West Bank and in Gaza, where children are being taught to hate Jews from the minute that they attend school, and they're shown books and movies, and they are taught hate, and it is built into their culture. And these are people that it's going to be very difficult, if not impossible, to change hearts and minds. Well, the same thing is happening on our college campuses and now in medical schools. These young people their brains have been poisoned. And this is why I say this is a lost generation, and we have to fix this problem. Otherwise, what we're seeing here is the tip of the iceberg right now. This happened in Nazi Germany to Jews in the 1930s. And we've seen this movie before, where Jews are being denied access to college campuses or are being harassed at medical schools or at hospitals. And in Nazi Germany and in Nazi-controlled occupied countries, Jewish doctors could only take care of Jewish patients, and then eventually not even being able to do that. So what happens? What do we do to turn this around? I'm going to get back into this when we return from our break. So stay with us in the Doctor's Lounge. This is Dr. Hal Schurz from the Doctor's Lounge on America's Web Radio. I want to thank you for your support. Our show is brought to you by the Docs for Patient Care Foundation, which is the only physician-led healthcare think tank in the country. Our website is www.4pcfoundation.org. We need you to support our organization so that we can continue to bring you this show and the information that you need so that you can support the healthcare of you and your family.
If you want the truth about politics, medicine, weapons, classic cars, and more, you'll want to tune in to America's Web Radio. You can listen to all of your favorite shows live at www.americaswebradio.com or on demand on iTunes, Spotify, or your favorite podcast app. That's www.americaswebradio.com.
What do doctors talk about in doctors' lounges around the country? Find out on the Doctors Lounge Show, every Thursday at 8 a.m. on America's Web Radio.
You're listening to America's Web Radio on the AmericasBroadcastNetwork.com. Thank you for listening.
Thanks for staying with us in the Doctor's Lounge. Let me continue telling the story about how anti-Semitism in the United States, and especially in healthcare, is going to be a problem unless we take active steps to turn this around, because the current administration has done nothing to punish those who are perpetrators of this hatred, and silence is there's no other way to interpret silence as acceptance. And so Jewish doctors around the country have been alarmed by this rampant anti-Semitism and even violence at healthcare institutions across the United States. So, in response, some of these doctors have created their own national advocacy group to combat the hatred in medicine. Thousands of medical professionals from across the country have joined this new American Jewish Medical Association. The thousands of medical professionals have come together to join the new American Jewish Medical Association to stand up for Jews. Quote, it is fundamentally scary for those of us who care about humanity. It's Nazi Germany all over again, said Manhattan plastic surgeon Yael Hawass, who's the founder and president of this new group. She's a graduate of Columbia University and Cornell Medical School. Quote, the hatred leveled against Jews after October 7th hit home for Jewish parents for Jewish patients. And Halas's family comes from Cuba and Argentina. They emigrated to the United States from those countries, and many members of her dad's family were murdered at Auschwitz. And medical schools have particularly become hostile environments for Jewish students. And among the troubling incidents are the following. At George Washington University Medical School, the faculty hosted a faculty panel in December that declared that terrorists have a right of resistance against Israel. Some medical professionals have praised the Hamas October 7th attack against Israel and denied the fact that victims in Israel were sexually assaulted. At UCSF Medical School, a sign outside of the cancer center there read, quote, free Palestine from Nazi Zionist Schwein. Schwein means pigs in German. This is it's so embarrassing, the stupidity of these people who put these things together, Nazi and Zionist. It's offensive, but it is embarrassingly how stupid they are. Anti-Israel protesters at rallies at Columbia University Medical School continually chant the phrase "from the river to the sea," which is basically a code word for eliminate Israel and have Palestine extend from the Jordan River west to the Mediterranean Sea. Most of the people who chant this don't even know what they're talking about. They have no idea what the river is or what the sea is. The Jewish medical students are bullied into silence, said Dr. Halas. They are being ostracized. It should not be controversial to say Israel is integral to Jewish identity. anti-Zionism is anti-Semitism. Zionism refers to the right of the Jewish state to exist. Dr. Carrie Schwartzbach, an orthopedic surgeon practicing in Fairfax, Virginia, and treasurer of the new group, said October 7th was a wake-up call. It opened the gates for anti-Semitism. There is a sense of hostilities against Jews. Anti-Semitism has made a lot of hospital residency programs uncomfortable for Jewish students. We need a voice. We need to protect ourselves and our medical school students. Larissa Geskin, who's an oncologist and the director of the Comprehensive Skin Cancer Center at Columbia, emigrated from Latvia 36 years ago. She was stunned by the anti-Semitism that she has personally witnessed on campus. "This is so familiar to me," she said. "In the Soviet Union, anti-Semitism was rampant. I never thought that I'd hear the same rhetoric in the USA that I heard in the Soviet Union. Jews are a minority and need protection like other minorities. We see history repeating itself. We feel we have to say something. They were chanting 'from the river to the sea' in my backyard. This is what is happening in the medical community." The American Jewish Medical Association is a 501c3 nonprofit organization comprised of physicians, fellows, residents, medical students, and public health and other healthcare professionals. Their mission is to address issues that pertain to rising incidents of anti-Semitism and anti-Zionism that impact the workplace and patient care. This group leverages the unified voice of Jewish doctors to stand strong with Israel, to promote Jewish values and ethics in medicine, and to combat anti-Semitism within the medical community. What are those Jewish values? They're ingrained into any Jewish person that is at all in any way observant. It's Tikkun Olam, which means repairing the world. And that's what Jews have stood for millennium. But the Jewish doctors are also committed to upholding the Hippocratic Oath by ensuring excellent medical care for patients of all faiths. And these useful idiot medical students are abrogating the Hippocratic Oath. They are turning their back on it. They are ignoring it. And that should not be allowed. These people should not be allowed to practice medicine if they take this position. This is what this organization, the American Jewish Medical Association, stands for. I would encourage every Jewish doctor and healthcare professional to go to their website and join and become a single unified voice against hate of Jews. I would encourage my Christian brothers and sisters to do the same. You can support this organization as a supporter because you do not want to see our healthcare system devolve into what is happening on college campuses today. This has got to be stopped. It's got to be nipped in the bud. You know, people deny that Israel has a right to exist. And what we are seeing right now in this country is all the more reason for there to be a Jewish state that protects Jews where they are safe, because the world does not want there to be any place for Jewish people. And you can see that play out no more evidently than at the United Nations, where there is no country that is standing up for Israel right now, and by proxy for the Jewish people. Even the United States, they are turning their back on Israel. At the UN, they have a UN ambassador who stands up in honor of the now deceased Iranian president, who has called for death to Israel, death to the United States. There is no moral compass in this administration. They are rudderless. And this is why we have got to get rid of this administration and of the leftists, the Marxists in this country, who are dragging down everything in this country, especially now that it is happening and it's made its way into healthcare. This is just unacceptable, and there needs to be an end put to this rhetoric. And by supporting the American Jewish Medical Association, that's the first step to put this to move this in a better direction. And to my Christian brothers and sisters, let me just tell you that Israel is your best friend for the preservation of everything that you hold dear from a religious standpoint, because without Israel as the guardians of all of the holy Christian sites, if the Palestinians took over, if the Muslims took over, they would do to Jerusalem and Israel and all the holy Christian sites what they've done to them all throughout the Middle East. They have exterminated them. You talk about a genocide. The genocide has been by the Muslim world against Jews, expelling them from all of the Middle East countries where there were robust populations for millennia. And they've been expelled, exterminated. There's been a genocide there. If you remember when ISIS took over in Syria and in parts of Iraq, all of the ancient sites, the historic religious sites that were not Muslim, were destroyed. And that will happen in Israel. So to my Christian brothers and sisters, your support of Israel is appreciated. It is necessary for the preservation of everything that you hold dear, and helping by supporting the American Jewish Medical Association would be a step in that direction. So let me take, I think I might have enough time to at least start this topic, and I'll change gears and hopefully we can spend more time on this when I don't have to devote so much time to something that I really never thought that I'd have to talk about, which is anti-Semitism in the United States and especially in healthcare. There's a real possibility that private practice medicine will disappear in the United States. This is a catastrophe were it to happen. Care would be entirely administered, delivered in hospitals. Now, currently, 65% of all doctors are employed by hospitals. So a large portion of the care is currently being delivered in that setting. For those of you who get your care at a hospital, whether it's a private hospital, a public hospital, a VA hospital, you know all of the pain that you have to go through to get the kind of care, get the kind of attention that you are expecting, trying to get through on a telephone to somebody when you're in the hospital, trying to get the timely care instead of having to wait for an indeterminate amount of time for your appointments. This is the future of healthcare for people who are not supportive of a private practice model. How has this happened? Why have we gotten to this point? Well, the biggest reason is because laws that prevented hospitals from buying up doctors and from and incorporating their services into a hospital setting have not been enforced. It's because hospitals are allowed to swallow up other hospitals and become monopolies, and antitrust laws have not been enforced. Why are these laws not being enforced? Because the government wants this to take place. They don't want you to have choices about healthcare. They want to herd everybody into one type of healthcare, because when that happens, it becomes easier for the government to control everything in healthcare. Now, this spells disaster for patients. Why? Higher cost, less access to care, longer wait times, and in many, many cases, inferior care. Now, nothing is going to happen to fix this problem in a Democratic administration that does not want to fix healthcare. And why don't they want to fix healthcare? Because they want to prop up Obamacare, which is the next step towards moving to the desired leftist goal of a single-payer healthcare system. A system which is bad for patients, as we have seen in all countries that have implemented this. Last week, Dr. Tim Richardson, a urologist and a LUGPA board member, testified before the Ways and Means Healthcare Subcommittee about the urgent challenges confronting independent physician practices. As a piece of background information, LUGPA, which is the board that Dr. Richardson serves on, is an acronym for the Large Urology Group Practice Association, a group that my practice in Atlanta is a part of. And Dr. Richardson emphasized the detrimental effects of hospital acquisitions and consolidations on healthcare cost, access, and quality. So Dr. Richardson highlighted a few key challenges. The first was over consolidation. Hospitals buying up hospitals, swallowing up hospitals, lack of competition. This leads to higher healthcare costs. It also leads to reduced patient choice. And it basically eliminates competition, especially in outpatient services. So if the hospital buys up all the independent labs in their community, then you've got to get your lab work done at the hospital. Or if they've bought up all the radiology facilities, you got to get your x-rays at the hospital, the most expensive place to get your care. The second key challenge was the unbalanced reimbursement schemes. Currently, reimbursement for healthcare services favors hospitals over independent practices. So that care that is administered in hospitals pays more than it would at a private setting. The third key challenge is regulatory burdens. There are laws that make it so difficult for small practices to operate. The Medicare Access and CHIP Reauthorization Act, or MACRA, and the Stark Self-Referral Laws are two of the major problems that impose substantial administrative and financial challenges on independent practices in order for them to be compliant. And the fourth challenge is inadequate charity care. Many hospitals, the majority of hospitals, claim tax-exempt status. So what does tax-exempt status mean? Well, it means that they have certain obligations that they have to fulfill in order to meet the requirements that allow them to claim that tax-exempt status, one of which is providing charity care. Well, many hospitals don't meet that that requirement. They may not do it at all, or there's a minimum amount of charity care that they are providing, despite benefiting from the considerable tax savings that they get to enjoy, or the federal programs that they're able to get additional funding in being a tax-exempt hospital. So to address these challenges, Dr. Richardson discussed several solutions. Predictable and sustainable payment updates. So this is the most important and the most critical factor. Independent physicians should receive payment updates that reflect their practice costs. Practices have been absorbing increased practice costs without any significant increase in the amount of money that they are receiving for the healthcare that they deliver. This makes it virtually impossible for small practices to stay viable. And so they have to sell their practices to hospitals or to other entities like private equity, which I have not even touched on right now. There is a very perverse reimbursement scheme, and doctors can't pass along these costs to their patients because most doctors participate in health plans, and those health plans have you sign an agreement when you're a doctor that gives you no ability to bill patients additional charges other than what you're agreeing to accept from the insurance carrier. So this has been a huge problem, and one that has led to the closing of thousands of medical practices around the country. Another is the regulatory burden. It has to be eased. There needs to be eliminating some of these burdens like the MIPS reporting, which is part of it. This is getting into the weeds, but there are reporting requirements that doctors have to fulfill in order to be able to get the maximum amount of Medicare reimbursement. And it costs the practices a lot of money in order to be able to meet those requirements. They need to be eliminated. Hospitals are allowed to participate in programs called APMs, alternative payment models. Doctors can't do that. That needs to be opened up to all private practice doctors, all healthcare deliverers, not just hospitals. And self-referral laws allowing doctors to open up a lab or an imaging center, or allowing different groups of doctors to come together to get economy of scale, needs to be allowed. That cannot be prohibited. Or allowing physicians to own hospitals again. These are all necessary steps in order to make healthcare more affordable to patients. Another solution would be to make sure that there are site-neutral payments, that hospitals don't get more money for delivering the same kind of treatment that a private practice doctor would do in their office. This is why hospitals are buying up medical practices, because they can charge five times as much or more by doing those procedures in a hospital setting. This is bad for patients. They're paying more. And the insurance companies tried to hide it, saying it's covered. But if you're responsible for 20% of the bill because of your copay, and the bill has been elevated 500% because it's happening in the hospital, this is a lot of money coming out of patients' pockets, and this needs to be stopped. And I'm going to devote a show that explains this a little bit better. I've just touched on these issues, and this is not even getting into the whole issue about businesses that own hospitals, private equity firms that are buying up, rolling up practices and making them do more procedures and become more productive so that they can increase the value of those practices. And then what do? They sell it. They flip it to another private equity firm. And the losers in this are are the patients and the doctors. The doctors may feel like they're getting money up front, but then they're selling their future earnings, they're selling their independence, and they're selling their patients down the road. They're selling them, they're no longer representing their patients, the doctors. They are representing their employer, who is telling them that they've got to do more. They've got to spend less time with their patients. They've got to do more tests. This is a problem that if we don't solve this problem by a change of administration, which I'm convinced will look at these problems critically because they don't want to see private practice go away. If we don't change it, be prepared for the loss of your doctor, the loss of private practice, a single-payer healthcare system, and a healthcare delivery system that is indistinguishable to you from what you are currently used to getting. So, thank you for listening to me today on the Doctor's Lounge, and I hope that you go to the American Jewish Medical Association and help them out. Go to Docs for Patient Care Foundation, help us out, and think about who you are going to vote for in November for preservation of your healthcare system. Thanks for being with us today. I'll be back in 2 weeks.
The views, opinions, and content of the show hosts and their guests appearing on America's Web Radio are their own and do not necessarily reflect those of the station.
You're listening to America's Web Radio on the AmericasBroadcastNetwork.com. Thank you for listening.